You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hello?
Oh, g'day. Is that Mark Day?
Hello, who's this?
Hi, Mark. It's Johnny from New Zealand radio station 95BFM.
Yeah. Are you all right?
I'm good. Are you okay to chat for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, I was told about it. I was watching Friday Night Chinese. Yeah.
Okay. Are you on a mobile or are you on a landline?
A mobile. Do I keep cracking up?
You just were a bit crackly at the very start of the conversation there.
Yeah, I've been moving. I'm moving upstairs because it's higher up. You see.
Okay, nice.
We have a lead roof and the reception's poor downstairs.
Okay, cool. So,
where are you calling from? New Zealand.
Yeah, I'm calling from New Zealand of all places.
Marvellous. I'll get there one of these days.
I don't think the band has ever been down here.
No, I don't think so either, no.
And now I've sort of taken a bit of an interest in the Happy Mondays recently. You guys are kind of a new discovery to me. And I recently read Excess All Areas, which I enjoyed so much.
Right, okay.
It's just good to get a bit of a history on you guys.
No, that's fine. Yeah, brilliant. No problem. Yeah. Well, I've been around for quite a while.
You have, personally.
Well, personally, I'm about 156 now, yeah.
I'm about 94, so.
Yeah, a bit of a time traveller, you know. I try and keep it quiet. I don't tell anybody about it, but, you know, how things go in Manchester.
are you still based in Manchester?
Yes, unfortunately. Can't get out of the place, but I love it, apart from the weather.
Now, the Happy Mondays have just completed like a 30th anniversary tour. How did that go?
It was rather compressed, rather 26 dates in 5 weeks or something like that. So when you get to our age, it gets a bit of like, you know, living on the tour bus. Some of them had hotels, but we're the band, so we had the tour bus, so it was bit stressful, you know, but we did it. Rock and roll, and loved every minute of it. Really, we've got a good reception, sold out gigs, and it's not something I can do every year because it's hard work. But we enjoyed it, and it's great to see everybody relive the 90s because all the crowd. And to be honest, there was a lot of new people in the audience, you know, like dad's kids. In the front row there, and I'm thinking, should they be at school tomorrow? It was one of those.
I mean, you had a break from the band for a couple of decades, perhaps. What's it like going back and revisiting the Happy Monday stuff?
It's a bit of a bizarre story for me because I walked away from the music industry in 95, 96 when the band actually split up. And it was probably 17, 18 years where I didn't play anything, I didn't listen to anything, I just got myself a normal job and just lived like everybody else, really. And it was only probably about 10 years ago, or 12 years ago, that the company I was working for, because I was like, well, I had a business, it went under, and I applied to the local council for a guitar teaching job, which I got. I don't know how, but they lacked my enthusiasm. But the only problem was I've not played in 17 years because all my guitars were in the loft. And so I had to sort of learn how to play guitar again. And I was learning off the kids because then I had to start learning to read music, you know, like tablet, not tablature, you know, how music was written in crotchets and quavers and all that. And I learned how to do that. And 5 years later, I got a phone call from one of Sean's managers that the original members of the Happy Mondays were rejoining, blah, de, blah, blah. Now, to be honest, I've not listened to all Mondays songs. I forgot. And there was no record of me. There was no, like, technology in them days. The only way I could do it was to remember. And 17 years buried in subconscious, that there's no way I could remember it. But because I've been learning how to play guitar again, teaching for 5-6 years, because some of the peers that I was working with really kept me going and I learned to play again. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here now, to be honest. So yeah, and then I got the call, got back together, spent a couple of months, and I had to listen to all the old records again, try and remember what the fuck I did 25 years ago. And I'm still doing it today.
Has it come back? Like,
do you know what? Yes, it has. It, I don't know why, but do you know when you know it's not right? You know when you that's why nobody can actually do what I do, because I do it my way, and the way I do it is totally different. It's not, because I used to write differently than everybody else. I just didn't do the major chords and just do the rhythm. I used to look at chords and find different things to do and work it out differently, and that's why I found it very strange trying to remember it all. And I knew when it was wrong. I had that gut feeling. I thought, that's not right. That's not right. And I'd spent hours and hours trying to work it out. And then so all of a sudden it got there. You know, it's just a case of listening. And then I'd have these flashbacks from the times that I was doing the damn thing. It's funny how the brain works. And for some reason, what I'm playing now is actually what I did 25 years ago. I can remember it all, which is a bit weird. But now I've actually written it all down in tablature form, so I've got records of it. So if I do actually get Alzheimer's, at least it's written there and somebody else can, you know, do it for me.
Pick it up. Nice.
Yeah.
Now, there's just so many styles, and it feels like influences crammed into the Happy Mondays records. Was it hard to coordinate writing of songs, or, you know, like at least put some sort of filter on it?
Well, we all came from different musical backgrounds. When I met the Sean and Paul, they were more into the Perry Boys, sort of soul, what was happening. I was more like into my like sort of Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Jimi Hendrix, 70s music coming out of all that, you know, because I love guitars and Primer. The music from my generation, 60s and 70s, with bass guitars. The 80s happened, it was all keyboard and synthesizers, and technology was changing it, and the guitar shoved back. So we all came, but was all listening to different backgrounds. And that infusion of everybody's different interests was why I was always being introduced to different music. It was like a kid in a sweet shop. There was so much to choose from musically in the 80s and 90s. So much to cherry pick, and I was like a surfboard. I surfboard all over the music. I didn't actually learn a song and go, oh yeah, I just used to listen to the top 20 on the radio and well, and work it out. I thought, well, yeah, well, you know, I just surfed and it wasn't, and that's what I kept doing. And so when we did actually write together, I just kept introducing different things, and sometimes I got the thumbs up, sometimes the thumbs down. Sometimes they'll be doing stuff and they go, I think, oh, this is shit, this. And they go, oh, that's brilliant. I couldn't win. So whatever I tried to do was not what I want to do, but I always listened to everybody's input. And that was the final. So, but most of the work was, you know, I just come up, I got this riff. They go, yeah, oh, nay. It was like that. Up, thumbs down. Oh, I like that. Keep playing that bit. So while they were working on it, and I'd work somewhere else, I'm at mid-late chorus, and, you know, that's how we work, really. It was just a trial and error.
Were these just famously long jams in your practice room?
Famously long, yes. I remember one jam, it was over 2 weeks. We just didn't eat, didn't drink, loads of drugs, and just kept jamming and jamming on the same chip. No, I'm only joking. probably a day. It's probably a day. We just, like, jammed and, like, you know, kept going and kept going until you had blisters on your fingers. And then the next day we'd come back. What we'd do is actually record it on... I don't even remember these. Do you remember tape recorders?
Yes.
These tapes. Well, I've still got the original tape recorder that we used to record on. I've probably got all the original recordings, actually. We used to go, jam it, record it. I'd go home, then we'd come back, and then, and then we'd be fresh. And then we'd listen to it again and say, fucking hell, how do you do that? And we couldn't recreate it. That was the daft thing about it, because it was just off our heads the night before trying to do something, come back the next day. Mind clear, so it was very different. Then we had to try and recreate what we did the night before, because Sean would go, that's not like, you weren't playing that. Yeah, we were, but it just sounded different, because the perception of your brain and what you've been taking and what you can hear is totally different to what happens when you've had a breakfast.
Now, there are some crazy hedonistic tales surrounding the band. It's kind of hard to believe that the wheels didn't fall off at some points. What were the things that kept the show on the road, or the unit, like, sort of functioning?
What, in the 90s?
Yeah.
Oh, 80s, 90s. 80s,
yeah. 90s.
Just that desire to get out of Salford or just be something, but really, we didn't really know what we wanted to do. We were just, all we wanted to do was be on Top of the Pops, and then you set the bar higher, and then you want to be on something else, and you want to do something else, and you want to go to America. And but it was like a monster. You kept feeding it, and the more you fed it, the more it went off rail, and the more like things kept happening. And it was like 3 steps forward, 4 steps back. You know, is we couldn't do nothing wrong until there was a moment when it all went pear-shaped. But you've probably read about all that. But it was, I think it was. I don't know. For me, it was just like a roller coaster ride. That never, you know, was just like, I kept thinking, it can't keep going like this. It can't keep going like this. But it did, it just kept going, and we couldn't do nothing wrong in the press. The press loved us to a point. And, it, you know, well, I don't know, really.
In the late 80s, did it actually feel like you guys were spearheading some sort of cultural revolution?
No, not really. We just kept travelling around the country in a van, just playing gigs and...
Yes, awesome.
We're just being ourselves, basically. We weren't trying to do anything, because we all had shit jobs. We all worked at the post office or some, you know, menial jobs and stuff. We all had shit jobs. We just wanted to change our lifestyle by doing something different. I didn't have any mates, because when I turned, my dad moved around his workplace quite a lot, so he's in different areas. So when I came to Swinton, I didn't know anybody, and I got these lads coming around to my house, and we were jamming in the loft. It was great, so I had some friends, and I just, because, you know, that's what you do, innit, as a kid. I was 17 then, 17 or 18, so it was like, you know, the only reason why I wanted to be in a band is to meet girls.
Of course, of course. Yeah, hi. I'm just listening.
Shut you up, innit?
I'm listening to your great stories. It's awesome to hear these firsthand. Now, you guys were, I guess, fairly regular at the Hacienda from like the really early 80s. How would you describe the place to someone that's never been there or never heard of it before or knows nothing about it?
Someone that's never been. Well, it wasn't when we first used to go. It was dead quiet. It was just like a nightclub that wasn't really going anywhere. There was nothing happening. It was a very expensive, and it was the only place open where you could get a drink, basically, at the beginning. And there's all sorts of acts going on, but nothing great. And then all of a sudden, something happened. I don't know who lit the litmus paper. Next thing, it was a place to be, and you had to queue up to get in. Well, I had a pass, obviously, and I think it was the start of the, you know, the Mondays, the whole Manchester scene, the explosion of the whatever they call it, you know. That took off, and then it totally changed, and it was a place to be. It was just mental. Everywhere you went, there was stuff going on, and you could get anything you wanted and to be anything you wanted, and it was just a crazy place. And then it went a bit sour. Obviously, no, you've heard the story, but that's the trouble with success. With every bit of success, especially nightclubs, there's always some bad elements that take it over. And that's what happened. But yeah, at the time it was. But I mean, for me, like, I never used to go to town a lot because. But for me, it was just a place where go and like-minded people who like music. Because the majority of people where I came from in Swinton, they're just pissheads. You know what I mean? Weren't into music. When I was into music, so when I went down there, I learned a hell of a lot. And then when I started meeting like Alan Erasmus and Tony Wilson and Mike Pickering. And all the people involved with the factory thing, and got more, and the more they wanted us, I kept thinking, why did they want us? You know, what did they see in us? I didn't get it. What they saw in us, but I didn't realise myself, because I was so involved in it that I just couldn't see what effect it was doing. But you know, and that Tony was a fucking genius. He was a great guy. I just loved him. But and what he did for factory was amazing. I'm fond memories of all that time.
Of the recording sessions that you guys did and the records you recorded from records and EPs you recorded, do you have a favourite record or recording session?
I haven't got the time to tell you this because, you know, you're talking about 30 years of, like, probably, well, probably not at the time, but there was loads of them. I mean, Capitol Records, Martin Hanna in Richard Branson's Gaff. There's so many stories that I can remember that stand out. There's, you know, what's it called? Sledgehammer. We recorded in this place, Meet and Seal. There's so many stories I can mention. For me in particular, it was when we did Pills and Thrills in Hollywood Boulevard, the Capitol Records, you know, that studio. Mm. No Capitol Records in Hollywood Boulevard, where we did Pills and Thrills, the actual recording of it. Well, that must stand out more because I could sense that something was happening big for us and things were going to change. The recording of probably Kinky Afro, Step On, and all the things that, you know, were big. But at the time, I didn't realise that because it was just, oh, it's a piece of piss, this. And I just ripped it apart, oh, there, and give them a riff, and then off they went, you know. But there was nothing, I mean, what you're looking, like, stories, antidotes.
Oh, no, I'm just, you know, just, I mean, just as you said then about, you know, like, you being able to sense or feel something particularly, you know, special about the recording, you know, in LA with Pills and Thrills. That's, yeah. I mean, that sort of stuff, or, I mean, obviously, when you guys did the cover for Elektra Records for that 40th anniversary covers album, what was it like to do the session for Step On?
Oh, well, to be honest, I got Tony Wilson said, oh, we got this record, John Conger song. Was it John Conger song? Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Who was it?
Yeah, John Conger's.
Right. We want to do this cover version. So we're doing it in 2 weeks. And I thought, are you fucking joking? So I listened to it, and I thought, this is a rock and roll. There's three guitars in that. There's no way I can do that. And it's like, damn dealing. So I just stripped it down to its bare essential, changed the thing, thought, this is all I'm getting out of the melody. Ding, 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 ding. And then they said, that's brilliant. I went, what? You're joking, aren't you? Yeah, I'm just going for a shit. That was it. I had enough after that. It was like, fucking hell. The next thing, it's a fucking hit.
What's it like when something, like a song like that, goes essentially global, turns into like a global hit? What does that feel like?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. At the time, it was like, I don't get it. I kept scratching my head. Well, what the fuck? I mean, I've been doing all these jazz chords and shit, and it's just, I'm just like, I'm trying to get technical with it, and I'm just dealing with it. It's a piece of piss. You know, 6-year-old can do that. Fuck no. The way people's brains work, I don't know, but you just have to simplify yourself and get down to their level. It won't happen again. There's nothing, I mean, music's changed, but I always try to keep it simple, you know, but do it a little bit different where it's not the normal chords, because everybody used to do the normal ones, and I used to, like, experiment. I had a book, you see, and it had over 100,000 chords in it, and I used to get a pin, and I used to flip through the pages and just shut my eyes and put the pin on the page and go, oh, that'll do. And I went, are you joking? 7 flat and 5th. That's not going to work in pop.
Amazing. Now, you worked as a postman right up until Pills and Thrills and Bellyaches came out. Was it awesome to be able to go, hey, see you later, normal job? I'm going to be a musician?
No, I said, I'm not leaving this job until I get paid a wage. I said, I've got a pension here. I'm staying in this job. I think then it changed. Then when I was on, then said, oh, you're on Top of the Pops. I said, right, see ya. I'm off post office, and all I got from that was a fucking post bag, and a Mac. That's all I got. I'm not even a fucking shitty pension. Fucking, I spent 15 years there, and fucking nothing. So yeah, basically, yeah, I was quite relieved. But I thought, hold on, this is not a proper job. This pop business, like. So does that mean I don't have to get up at 4:30 in the morning? And that was the clinch. I didn't have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. I could have a lie-in, which was really nice. So I thought, yeah, I'll go with that.
Nice. When you're working as a postman and also doing the band stuff, it must have been such a long day for you. A full day's work at the post office and then hours, I guess, jamming with the band?
Well, let's put it this way, right? I didn't sleep for about a year. Because when you're up at 4:30 in the morning, you're probably getting home at 3:30 from London gig. You lie in bed for 30 minutes and then you're off to work. You know what I mean? It was one of those. So I'd spend many a time off my face delivering mail in Farnworth and Bolton. And everybody would used to complain because I used to put the gyros in the wrong street. Quite bizarre, really. And I used to get told off quite a lot. Because, like, that's what rock and roll is, you know.
Yeah.
God knows, I won't get away with it today, trying to get to work off your face, right, trying to get to work. that on a motorbike, 250 Honda Wet Dream, in the pissing rain, off this face, and get to work, piss about, try and sort my mail, they'd get out, and then they'd have a gig probably the night after as well somewhere. So we'd get, oh, it's fucking, I don't know how to do that. My parents kicked me out, to be honest. I got kicked out of my house. They couldn't stand it. They didn't know what I was doing. They thought I was on heroin. Well, that was Sean's fault. He did actually say something in the press. I was on smack. It wasn't that. I was just couldn't get any sleep.
Now, obviously, you guys were like right on the forefront of when ecstasy turned up in the UK. Was that an amazing time?
Not for me, no, because I'm sure they used my guitar case to smuggle shit in, but that's another story. I can't really prove that, apart from my corned beef butties. Because I had indigestion quite a lot, so I used to have corned beef butties in my guitar case. So. But, yeah, it was and it wasn't. It was like, I really didn't get it a bit. It was nice. I mean, I like my own drugs, but that was like, you know, I don't know, so... But, yeah, it was quite a... bit of acid and all that stuff, but I wasn't really, because I couldn't really work on it, because it was like, oh, I love my guitar. And I've tried everything on, you know, trying to play on stage with certain substances, and, you know, the ecstasy was, it was all right. I didn't really get it, real. I'd rather do acid, to be honest. But, yeah, all the lovely stuff. Yeah, it was good, yeah, can't remember. There's a bit of a gap in there, so I'll have to pass on that one.
A hazy time, yeah.
It was a very, well, the whole affair was a hazy affair, yeah. It comes back to me in a hot sweat in the morning, you know. That really happened. Yeah. No, it was part of the culture, it was part of the fashion. I think if you've got that and the fashion and the music, then it's obviously going to be a big thing because everybody wants to know, and it led on to other things as well, didn't it? So, yeah.
I was just wondering about Derek Ryder, because he's a figure that pops up in XSL areas a couple of times. He's obviously Sean and Paul's dad. He seemed to just like sort of always be there for you guys and, you know, like obviously did all the roadie type stuff. What was, you know, how would you describe him as an influence on the band?
Well, if it wasn't for Derek, I don't think we'd be here. We wouldn't have actually existed. He was probably my second dad. I met Derek in Farmouth Post Office, and there was two characters used to come in, and I used to look at them, and they both used to have eye makeup on. I thought, are these two a bit weird or what? But they did a comedy duo act around Bolton, Blackburn, Bury and all that area. They did an act, Derek and Barry, and that's how I got introduced to the band. So obviously Derek was a very knowledgeable guy, kept me going because we worked in the same office, and he introduced me to Sean and Paul. So without him, I won't be here, you won't be talking to me now. So God bless him, brilliant guy.
Amazing. And hopefully at some point in the future, we'll look forward to being able to see you on this side of the planet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, yeah. I nearly got there once. I nearly got to Australia, but which is not far off. What we need to do is that side, Japan, Australia, New Zealand. That'd be great.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Johnny. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I hope you've got enough there for your article, and God bless, and I'll see you soon, dude.
See you soon. Bye.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.